In our next dialogue, Dr. Mary Lupo and Dr. Diane Burson highlight some of the current and up-and-coming therapeutics for addressing common cosmetic complaints.
My name is Dr. Diane Burson. I'm an assistant clinical professor of dermatology at the Weill Medical College of Cornell University in New York. It's my pleasure to have as my guest today Dr. Mary Lupo, professor of dermatology at Tulane. And today we're going to discuss cosmetic issues for the medical dermatologist. What we're going to do is approach common complaints that patients have when they come into our office. These include redness or erythema, pigmentation disorders, and wrinkles. And what we're going to do is talk about some of the topical therapies, but also some of the procedures that can be performed to address these concerns.
Well, thank you, Diane. I think that certainly the medical diagnosis of acne and the medical diagnosis of rosacea demands that the practicing medical dermatologist have an understanding of cosmeceuticals and about procedures that help these conditions. Because we all know that acne and rosacea tend to be chronic, episodic, and somewhat relapsing. And those of us who treat a lot of rosacea know that whereas the medical management of rosacea, we see improvement with pharmaceutical agents in the papulopustular component of rosacea, the erythematelangiectatic aspect of rosacea really does not respond to topicals as we have today. And in my experience, since 1999, in my practice, I've been using intense pulse light devices as well as vascular laser devices. In my office, I use 532 lasers, but certainly there's tremendous published data, not just on IPL and improvement of erythema, but also the 532 lasers and, of course, the pulse dye 585 lasers. So there's a great amount of scientific data to show that these instruments, these devices, can help our patients with somewhat the cosmetic problem of rosacea, and that is the redness and the flushing. I always disclose to my patients that whereas these devices can improve the redness, because of the relapsing nature of rosacea, that no treatment that I can give them at this time will give a permanent improvement in their erythema. So I've also had good success using salicylic acid. I still incorporate peels within my practice, and there's a market for peels, but my number one peel in my practice for rosacea is actually salicylic acid, and I use anywhere from a 20 to a 30% concentration. And I've found that salicylic acid peels are much better for redness than glycolic peels. I think that glycolic peels are very efficacious for acne and for melasma, but in my hands, I've had more success with salicylic acid for the redness, and I think it's because of the anti-inflammatory benefits that you get from salicylic acid.
Right, and salicylic acid is lipophilic, so it gets into the sebaceous follicle, so it's helpful for those oily patients, but Dr. Lupo brings up a great point. Salicylic acid is basically aspirin, and so it's anti-inflammatory, and it can be very helpful for patients with rosacea.
It's very well tolerated, and I think the ideal patient for a salicylic acid peel is one who has erythema, some papules, pustules, and has that large pores and somewhat oily rosacea patients. They do extremely well and see a diminishment in the appearance of their pores and see an overall textural improvement. And I think it's because of the fact that it seems to decrease some of the excess oiliness.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And that's usually my go-to peel for patients with acne and rosacea.
Well, but you have such experience. What do you see coming down the pipeline with products to help with erythema, and how much improvement do you get with pharmaceutical agents and cosmeceutical agents, and how do you approach incorporation of cosmeceuticals with your rosacea and acne patients?
Well, you see, this is a great question, and as I mentioned earlier, the best thing we can offer our patients to decrease their redness when they have erythematotelangiectatic rosacea is a laser or light treatment to help decrease the redness. The FDA approved treatments for rosacea, azelaic acid, metronidazole, and subantimicrobial doxycycline, do help decrease the redness, but we now realize that they're probably decreasing the perilesional erythema, so that they're mainly helpful for patients who have papulopustular rosacea. But for those patients who have purely erythematotelangiectatic rosacea, they almost present in the same way that someone would with chronic photo damage, and sometimes it's even hard to differentiate between those two conditions. So most of the products that I recommend for patients patients to help decrease their redness are the cosmeceuticals, which contain antioxidants and anti-inflammatories to help decrease the redness and inflammation, and also some of the barrier repair moisturizers, because we all know that patients with rosacea and with photo damage have a destroyed barrier, and they've lost their barrier integrity. So by helping restore that barrier, we can improve the way they appear. So the ingredients we usually recommend for barrier repair and moisturizers are the epidermal lipids, such as ceramides. We also recommend products that contain hyaluronic acid, which is a humectant, and certainly some of the occlusives for those who are very dry. Some of the ingredients in over-the-counter cosmeceuticals, which can help decrease redness and decrease inflammation, include the vitamin C, vitamin E, certainly vitamin B or niacinamide, which will help plump the barrier and also has anti-inflammatory properties. Also, the polyphenolic flavonoids, such as soy, green tea, these will help decrease inflammation, along with a lot of other organic ingredients, such as caffeine and feverfew and licorice. The problem, though, is that while these ingredients might help decrease inflammation and help restore the barrier, none of them address the vasodilatation, which is occurring in patients with rosacea. The two main pathogenic factors in rosacea are the inflammation and the vasodilatation. And what's exciting is that we do have a couple of products in the pipeline that will address this vasodilatory aspect. And the way they work is actually by constricting the smooth muscles that line the vessels. They're alpha agonists. And by constricting these vessels, they will actually decrease the redness. And what's nice is that they seem to work very fast. They seem to last a full day when they're used, and there's no tachyphylaxis, so patients can use them for weeks and weeks without losing their effect, and there's no rebound when they stop using them. So I think that these new alpha agonists are going to be very exciting for us to add to our armamentarium for patients with rosacea, especially with the erythematode telangiectatic.
And that leads me to comment that there's a misconception with a lot of people that rosacea patients can't use retinoids. Rosacea patients can indeed use retinoids. And I have had particular luck with adapalene, which can be aggressive. But I think that the key is to address the compromised barrier and make sure that you've educated your patient appropriately on methods of cleansing and hydration, specifically addressing the lipid barrier. And if you do that, then you can get the benefits of retinoids, because remember, retinoids are anti-inflammatory. So it's very important. And the other thing in my experience regarding cosmeceuticals is that I agree vitamin C is a great antioxidant. However, with rosacea patients, I tend to look more for the non-ascorbic acid variant of vitamin C, and tend to look more for the magnesium ascorbyl phosphate and the ascorbyl palmitates, which are net at a neutral pH and not an acid. And I find that patients seem to tolerate that better.
Well, that's a great point. And I agree with Dr. Lupo about retinoids. Retinoids really can be used effectively for patients with rosacea. And remember, most of the patients with the erythematode telangiectatic form of rosacea also have actinic photo damage. They are chronically photo damaged, and we know that the retinoids are really the best topical we have to reverse the signs of photo damage. And Mary brings up a great point. It's just instructing patients how to use this correctly so that they can tolerate it well. And I think one thing we can recommend is that our patients use a barrier repairing moisturizer and a thin layer before they apply the retinoid. It increases the tolerability of the retinoid without compromising the efficacy. So this is something we recommend.
And another way is I call it the mask treatment, where you only put the retinoid on for a definitive short period of time. And then I actually have my patients rinse it off with a moisturizer. And they're only having it on for a very, I call it I tell my patients to spot and spread using a pea-sized amount, evenly distributing it to the whole face, because you don't want to be chasing after your acne and chasing after your rosacea by treating just lesional areas. You want to preventatively treat with retinoids. And then by using either the emollient before, as you suggested, or using it for a definitive short contact period of time, I think you can improve tolerability. And, you know, I think that you make a good point about photoaging and rosacea. And I doubt if I ever see a patient who has rosacea that does not have an element of photo damage.
And basically, we do know that rosacea does flare when patients are exposed to the sun. And so Dr. Lupo recommends the inorganic titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. And what's nice about the newer formulations is that these have been ground down. So rather than having the opaque, chalky, heavy, greasy formulations that we used to have with these products. We now have the microfine particles, which are very cosmetically appealing. They rub on easily, they're smooth, and they don't clog pores, and they're very light. So it is very important to include this. And I think most of these patients do well with a morning sun protection agent and a nighttime retinoid, and then we can add in the cosmeceuticals with it.
I agree. One of the procedures I strongly advise against, especially with active rosacea or with the telangiectatic form of rosacea, is no particle resurfacing or what is commonly known as microdermabrasion. I've seen frequent flares from that. But you know, that particular procedure, i.e. particle resurfacing, microdermabrasion, etc., I think is pretty good for pigment, which is another issue that we see as a medical complaint that sort of we have to address some of the cosmetic issues of it. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. So our next complaint is that of pigmentation. What are your favorite approaches for the patient who's complaining of hyperpigmentation? It could be due to photo damage. It could be due to melasma. How do you approach these patients?
Well, absolutely. The most important thing is to educate the patient about the importance of daily and aggressive sun protection. Sun exposure is insidious. You know, you're getting it through windows. And I tell my patients, you wear this product July or January, rain or shine, it does not matter. You wear it every day. Put it by your toothpaste. It's critical that you protect from ongoing sun exposure if you're trying to. You can't reverse the freight train until you stop the freight train. So obviously sun protection is critical. From a cosmeceutical standpoint, I've had success with incorporating adjunctively vitamin C's, niacinamides, the soy products. But I think we will all agree that the gold standard for improvement of existing pigmentation is the hydroquinones. There are a number of new proprietary pigment reducing agents that are too many, too detailed, and too proprietary for us to get in this format. But I think that clearly any of those products are used only as an adjunct to decrease the dependence or the longevity of how long our patients have to be on hydroquinone. So I typically, with hydroquinone, try to get in and get out, as they say, and use that 4% concentration, combine it with retinoids, and then as soon as I'm seeing some improvement, then go to more of a cosmeceutical product that diminishes pigmentation. Hopefully that'll keep me on the ground that I've gained with the hydroquinone, and then use hydroquinone pulsing over a patient, because like rosacea, unfortunately, melasma is a chronic and relapsing skin condition. When I do a laser procedure for melasma, what I tell my patient for the procedural treatment of the redness of rosacea or the procedural treatment of the pigment of melasma is that I'm going to give you a degree of improvement for a finite period of time. When I have someone I'm treating photo damage, I tell them, you know, this improvement can be indefinite if you then buy into the constant sun protection. But melasma and rosacea being medical conditions, they will be episodically relapsing. And so I tell my patients that if we're lucky, we'll get improvement for about 6 months to a year. I do have patients that I have 3 and 4 years out that are clear after procedures, but I can't predict who will get a long-term remission and who won't. So I tend to underpromise, if you will. And then if I overdeliver, then I'm a hero.
You usually are. And then you do tend to maintain your patients on a topical retinoid, right?
Always. Okay. Always. Retinoids are, you know, I typically will tell my patients, for example, my acne and my melasma patients, that, you know, the only time you have permission to stop the retinoid is if you become pregnant. You're never cured for this. You can never let down your guard with melasma. You can never let down your guard with rosacea. When you look good, don't be lulled into complacency. You must be compliant. You must continue to use at least a maintenance program.
I think maintenance is very important for all of the medical conditions we treat, whether it's eczema, seborrheic dermatitis, psoriasis, acne, rosacea, and certainly photo damage. I agree. I like to maintain all of my patients on a sun protection agent every morning and a retinoid at least a few nights a week to keep them looking clear and to prevent their photo damage.
And that's true. And we're dermatologists. We are not just procedural physicians and surgical physicians, we're medical physicians. And we understand the nuances of skin disease, and we understand the relapsing nature of certain skin conditions. And I think the same thing could be true with patients who have eczema. When a patient who has eczema is clear, if they're not careful with their barrier protection and maintaining the hygiene appropriately of their skin, they're going to relapse. It's not an if, but a when. And I think what we do with our management of these conditions is we adjust the when. We delay it. We give them longer periods of remission, but we have to give our patients realistic expectations. That's the art of medicine, is our communication skills with our patients.
Well, that's a great point. And I think as physicians first, teaching our patients how to prevent flares of their condition, whether it's using a moisturizer on our atopic dermatitis patients or retinoid in our photo damage or acne patients, this is why we are dermatologists and this is what we do best. Having spoken about the medical treatment of all these, with our short minutes left, I would love for you to review some of the procedures, device procedures and injectable procedures we can use for patients who are experiencing wrinkles and signs of aging.
Well, you know, when I have a new wrinkle patient, you know, you have to assess, is it fine lines? Is it wrinkles? Is it folds? Is it redundancy of skin? And I need to address it. And I do everything non-surgically. I use the needle and I use the light. And so a typical combination for patients would be to address the nasolabial folds, not by just filling the fold, but using these products off-label, which are very much the standard of care, to give some volumetric fill to the cheek area to give a lifting to the nasolabial fold. But when I have a patient who comes in and they're complaining of wrinkles, the devices that we have, I think, really improve more the lines. The etched lines can be improved by stimulating collagen production. And whether one uses a totally non-ablative device or one uses somewhat of a non-ablative fractional device, the 1540 or the 1550 lasers, or if you do a fractional ablative CO2 or full CO2 ablation, you have to titrate, if you will, the aggressiveness of the treatment to match the severity of the patient's condition. But all patients need to be pre-treated with retinoids and sun protection to prepare their skin appropriately for the treatment, and by all means to prevent a regression after you do the treatments. And so I usually tell patients that what I'm doing with my tools is perhaps using radio frequency devices to tighten the skin, or ultrasonic tightening devices to tighten the skin, incorporating that with some sort of resurfacing to improve the canvas of the skin, the color of the skin, using a 1927 thulium laser, or using a fractional 1540 or 1550, or the light-based therapy. You know, people often say if you're going to get one device as a medical dermatologist, I think that device needs to be a vascular device because it will address the redness of scars. It has anti-inflammatory benefits to help your rosacea and your acne patients. And you can use it medically and you can use it cosmetically. You can use it for telangiectatic vessels. So when you use these devices non-ablatively, you do get some collagen deposition. So I think that it just kind of depends on your patient population, your skills. My mantra is always, it's not the filler, it's the filler. It's not the product that you're using, it's who's injecting it. It's the art of the injectable. And it's the decision of the physician as to which device to use and what settings to use on that device. And I think that you could take 10 dermatologists who are procedurally inclined and give them one patient. And I dare to suggest that you'll get 10 sort of methods. We're like chefs in a kitchen and none of us cook exactly the same. But I think at the end, what we give our patients is a level of control over their condition, confidence in how they look, and at the same time, we're often helping their medical problems.
Well, I think this is great. And again, I think whether a patient has acne or rosacea or photo damage, when they come in and they're concerned about redness, wrinkles, discoloration, blotchiness, we have a whole toolbox that we can work with. But basically, between the topicals that a patient can use at home, neurotoxins, fillers that we can inject in the office, and some of the technologies and the devices that we have, we can take a patient and make them look much better using non-surgical techniques. And I think our specialty has really come a long way. Thank you so much for joining us.
Cosmetic outcome is an important determinant of patients' quality of life and often can be their primary or only complaint. Cosmetic dermatology is not only a field of its own, but it's also an integral part of general and medical dermatology practices. This discussion primarily focused on therapeutics in treatment of three common complaints by patients: erythema, hyperpigmentation, and wrinkles. The prototypical disease of erythema and the focus for the discussion is erythematotelangiectatic rosacea, a disease that can often be recalcitrant to treatment with low patient satisfaction. Understanding the pathophysiology of the erythema is integral to understanding the treatment for the disease. The pathogenesis of erythema in rosacea is primarily caused by two mechanisms, vasodilation and inflammation. In targeting the vasodilatory aspect of disease, newer agents such as the topical alpha agonist, bromodidine tartrate, and oxymetazoline are used with great success. These agents directly target smooth muscles that control the size of the cutaneous vessels. They have fast onset of action, long therapeutic half-life, and do not exhibit tachyphylaxis or rebound erythema. In addition, these topical alpha agonists do not exert a systemic effect on blood pressure. In targeting the inflammatory aspect of rosacea, Drs. Lupo and Burson discuss several other therapeutic options, one of which includes the use of chemical peels. For treatment of rosacea, Dr. Lupo recommends salicylic acid peels over glycolic acid. The latter, in her opinion, is better suited for the treatment of hyperpigmentation and wrinkles. Salicylic acid is a lipophilic anti-inflammatory drug and can penetrate sebaceous glands, which targets the root of the problem in rosacea. In addition to peels, other cosmeceuticals used in rosacea include azelaic acid, metronidazole, and antimicrobial doxycycline, all of which exert anti-inflammatory effects. Furthermore, azelaic acid can also have an anti-keratinizing effect. In addition to cosmeceutical therapies, lasers, particularly the ones that allow for the selective photothermolysis of cutaneous microvessels, are useful as a field therapy for erythema. Dr. Lupo recommends vascular lasers. Laser therapy can also be effectively used to address other important cosmetic complaints, namely hyperpigmentation and wrinkles. In general, Q-switched ruby and near-infrared lasers are excellent in targeting pigmented lesions, while resurfacing non-ablative fractional CO2 lasers and erbium lasers have been used with varying success for pores and wrinkles. In addition to lasers for targeting deeper structures below the dermis, radiofrequency treatments can be used as a non-invasive method for skin tightening. Induction of collagenesis neoelastogenesis can be used as a non-invasive method for skin tightening, induction of collagenesis neoelastogenesis, and body contouring. The armamentarium against aging also includes injectable agents. These mainly include neurotoxins and fillers, which have distinct mechanisms of action and function. Injectable neurotoxins, or botulinum toxin A-containing products, are wrinkle relaxers. These products function to paralyze the muscles that cause wrinkles. Fillers are used to pump, fill, and lift. The fillers that are currently available in the market include hyaluronic acid, calcium hydroxyapatite, and poly-L-lactic acid. Of these, calcium hydroxyapatite and poly-L-lactic acid are thought to have the advantage of inducing collagen synthesis. Although fillers differ in their mechanism and duration of action, Dr. Lupo's mantra when it comes to injectables is, "It's not the filler, it's the filler," referring to the fact that outcome is more dependent on the practitioner than the actual type of product used. She went further on to comment that no single practitioner uses injectable agents the same way. Cosmetic dermatology provides many lessons for all areas of dermatology. First of these is that topical therapies used in cosmetic dermatology are often more than mere cosmetics. They are formulated with an understanding of the pathogenesis of disease and target the root of disease. For instance, alpha antagonists may not work for papulopustular rosacea, whereas the anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial agents will have an effect. The second point is the importance of prevention in stopping further damage as well as disease flare, which applies to most chronic skin diseases. It is important for practitioners to address the relapsing nature many skin diseases exhibit, and to disclose to patients that no treatment can provide permanent improvement. Finally, the greatest lesson is the importance of setting reasonable patient expectations. Setting the appropriate expectations of therapeutic intervention through effective communication is important in all areas of dermatology, and is particularly true for cosmetic dermatology. Effectively communicating the expected outcome without overpromising is an important part of informed consent and a determinant of overall patient satisfaction.